This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Welcome, gather round the fireside and listen to a tale of Fionn Mac Cool, Cool Cullen, Deirdre of the Sorrows, Gron, your wail. From giants right down to fairies, of both the drooping and solitary, and close to us sometimes scary. Anything goes by the fireside. Yeah. Fireside, the Puka fireside, the Merrow fireside. Kings and queens fighting heroes, don't you run from the fun, there's no need to hide. Sit by the fireside. Fireside.
Hello and welcome to Fireside, the Irish storytelling podcast. Each episode of Fireside, we take a story from folklore and mythology, we retell it, have a chat about the tale itself and about the craft, the culture and the history of storytelling. My name is Kevin C. Olahan. I'm your host and your Fireside Bard. Welcome to episode 197 of Fireside. Today on the Irish storytelling podcast, we have a legend of a Kerry king and how he helped a young man out with his rent. This is the story of Rent Day. Don't be alarmed. But before we get on to that, if it's your first episode and you enjoy it, listen to this and then think about why not heading back all the way back to episode one, nearly 4 years ago. There's nearly 200 episodes of Fireside for you to listen to on our journey through Irish folklore and mythology, our sidesteps into legend and cultures and mythologies from other parts, everything in between. There's something for everyone there if you enjoy. And if you're a returning listener, whether it's been for a few weeks or a few months or even a few years, thank you so much for your continued support. All the ways you can usually support the podcast, you can follow me on Instagram at FiresideBard. You can share the podcast on your story. You can share it with your friends, anyone you think would like it. That is still to this day the best way for the podcast to grow. And I appreciate every message I get. I try to get back to every single one of them. I love hearing from you all and where in the world you're from and your thoughts on all the episodes and sending me on your own stories and all. Please keep doing that. I love reading each and every one of them. You can also, if you're not on social media, you can email me at thefiresidebard if you have any inquiries by their business or personal. My personal favorite way you could support is at the moment is that you could buy my book, Garden Scene, my Neomyth of Home, which was launched officially a few weeks ago. You can get that in paperback from headstuff.org or from Kindle version on Amazon. All the links are in the description below. That is my current favorite thing in the world, is to package these books up and send them all around the world, whether it's over to another county in Ireland or to the other side of the planet, which I've done both of quite recently, which is brilliant. I adore sharing it so much. It's been an immensely personal journey and the most satisfying thing I've ever done so far has been the publication of Garden Sea. And Garden Sea wouldn't have existed without Fireside, and Fireside wouldn't continue to exist without all of you. So thank you so much. The final way is, of course, that you can join Headstuff Plus at headstuffpodcast.com for as little as €5 a month, or they can pay more if you want. You can gain access to bonus material for Fireside and all of the podcasts on the Headstuff Podcast Network. Hard sells out of the way. I'm recording this episode, same session as last week's episode, in the Knightsbrook Hotel in Trim. We're still in rehearsals here. We fly to New Zealand. We will be in New Zealand by the time this episode comes out. Just wanted to do, I'll record a couple of episodes while I'm out there, while we lead up to Christmas, but wanted to try and get ahead of myself as I could, especially since the first couple of weeks of tour are usually the most hectic, as you can be rehearsing during the day while you're doing shows at night and long hours of travel, and I've never been to New Zealand before and all, so we don't know what it's going to be like there in terms of the tour, but I'm very, very much looking forward to it. Very excited for it. The show's in great shape. We've got a fantastic cast, who I'm very happy to be working with. And the story for this week was a very... I got some things out with this tale, naturally, as anyone who has lived in Ireland, in particular Dublin, over the last 10 years, as I did for 8 of the last 10, essentially, and has had experience with rent. Anyone who's had any bad experience with a landlord or with rent in general, but it's been a particularly bad place in Dublin with a drastic housing crisis and rental crisis that still goes on and still goes largely untreated or unaided. And this horrifying thing about adapting stories about rent from the mid-19th century is seeing how relevant they still are, which they really shouldn't be. And parts of reading this was like it could have been written in the Irish Times today. So I had a lot of fun with this one. I got out a lot of stuff. And it was a really interesting tale as well, because while I'm adapting mostly folklore at the moment instead of alternating between folklore and mythology, I still wanted to try and find some tales that have that feel like the myths do. They have a slightly grander scale when the folklore has the more domestic scale. And I love them both in equal measure, but I like the balance between the two. And I found this tale. There's a section in the beautiful Fairy and Folk Tales of Ireland, edited by W.B. Yeats, on Tiernanog and on like the land of youth. And so naturally that was a place to go for something a bit more godly. And this was an aspect of Tiernanog that I didn't really know about. It's not really Tiernanog-esque, but it's still categorized kind of Tiernanog-ish. And you will soon see why. And it's a cool story with nice characters in it. I won't give any more away now, as I'm explaining very poorly anyway, in an effort to not give any detail away. So enough waffle, we will chat more afterwards. This is Rent Day on Fireside. Rent Day. There was once a king called O'Donoghue, who lived and reigned by a lake in Killarney, County Kerry. O'Donoghue was generous to all guests who visited, giving away every bed in his castle and hosting bountiful feasts that went through the night. But the king was also more than capable of defending his subjects and lands. He was fearless in battle, riding out front on his wave-like white steed, and this sense of justice extended to his own household. There was a desolate rock out on Killarney Lake that was known as O'Donoghue's prison, where it was said the king had exiled his own son for disorder and disobedience. The end of O'Donoghue, as you couldn't really call it his death, was very mysterious. During one of his great feasts, the king arose and gave a speech. He began to tell the future of his house, his castle, and every one of his guests. The king's auditors, creditors, and tax collectors all listened with an explosion of emotion. One moment they were wrapped in wonder, the next they were fired with indignation. They burned with shame and melted with sorrow as O'Donoghue detailed the heroics, injuries, and crimes of their descendants. When the king had finished his prophetic oration, he walked from the banquet table, out the castle gates, and walked into the lake. He walked further and further out, with his head still tall and proud above the surface of the water. His guests and guards had followed O'Donoghue from the feast and marvelled as the king reached the centre of the lake and disappeared from view. It has been many, many years since the mysterious vanishing of King O'Donoghue, but every May Day, the anniversary of his disappearance, it is said that O'Donoghue rises from the lake in full battle regalia on his foam-white steed, attended by his retinue of guards, and proudly continues his judicious rule of Killarney. One particular 1st of May, a young man named Bill Doody sat by the lake of Killarney and made a lamentation to no one in particular. "Oh, what in the world am I to do? Tomorrow is rent day, and I haven't a shilling to my name. And Tim the driver, my degenerate landlord, will throw me and Judy out of the house. And the children. Oh, I wish I'd never lived to see this day. to be responsible for the destitution of my own family. The beauty of this lake mocks me. For what good can a peaceful scene offer when your own heart is at war? But poor Bill Doody was not as alone as he thought by the vast lake. It was a place he frequently went for solitude, because you could see the water and fields in every direction. No one could sneak up on you when you sat by the lake. So a man could go and lament all the sorrows of the world. Nevertheless, as the restless, rentless soul sat with his head in his hands, he did not notice the approach and appearance of a stranger. "What is the matter, my poor fellow?" Bill shot his head up, surprised to see anyone, much less a tall and portly man in a majestic breastplate and tall hat with proud plumage. This was to say nothing of the tall, white horse on which the stranger was mounted. Bill Doody blinked. How he had not heard the horse's hooves, he did not know. He was immediately unsure if this man or his steed were of this world. But the stern but warm face of the stranger gave Bill his courage and voice. "A lot is the matter with me. The crop has failed. I've been conned out of my butter. And now Tim the driver has said that he will evict my entire family if I do not pay the rent in full by tomorrow morning." "I'm sorry to hear that. But surely if you tell your landlord what you have just told me, he would find it in his heart to let you stay." "For that, a landlord would have to have a heart," said Bill Doody. "You obviously aren't from around here. You don't know Tim the driver. He's had his eyes on my family farm since I took it over from my father. We've never had much, but we've always got by, and I've never asked for more than the roof over our children's heads and to live in our beloved Killarney." From the height of his saddle, the armoured apparent reached to his belt and removed a cloth satchel. He held it out and emptied the contents directly into the hat resting on Bill Doody's lap. From the weight and sound of the mounting coins, Bill Doody was in no doubt this was real gold. Guineas, an entire mortgage's worth. "Take this," the mounted man said, "and use it to pay your rent. But fear not, I will see to it that this gold brings your landlord no joy. I am sorry this has happened to you and your family. In my day, this Tim the driver would have been hanged." But Bill Doody could not hear a thing for the clanking coins. He was fixated on the sight of the glistening gold, drooling with disbelief, his mind an asteroid echoing across a cosmos of new opportunities. By the time Bill Doody had recovered his senses and realized once more where he was, he looked up, not even knowing how to begin to thank the generous rider. But the benefactor and his buckaroo were gone. Bill looked across the lake and across every field in every direction, but there was not a sign of anything or anyone. "O'Donoghue," Bill Doody cried out loud. "I just met O'Donoghue. More than that, I received O'Donoghue's blessing." Barely able to carry the coins in his patchy hat, but careful not to let a single piece spill out, Bill ran back home to his wife. Judy Doody did not believe what her husband said had happened was possible. But there was the gold in Bill's hat, as real, heavy, and glittering as only gold can be. And yes, Bill's wife's name was Judy Doody. The next day, a smartly dressed Bill marched proudly to the large home of his landlord, Tim the driver. The landlord looked up from his desk. "I did not expect to see you here today, Bill. I thought I would have to smash in your door. And since that door will very soon be mine, I would rather it intact. But you clearly don't realize my position if you stand before me and do not remove your hat." Bill stood firm, with hat remaining on head. "I know I am not in the presence of a king, for I know no the presence of a king. And other than that,
I only remove my hat for those I love or respect. And the eye that sees all knows that there's no way to love or respect a landlord. Tim the driver leapt to his feet. You insolent pup. I'll teach you to talk like that to me, you scoundrel. Don't forget it's me who holds the power and not you, you peasant. You're right. You do hold the power. Much to the shame and ruin of my country. It is your lot that has made our beloved land inhospitable, untenable, and bleak. Your greed has robbed us of our 100,000 welcomes. Have you the rent or not? Asked Tim the driver, seeking to drive this serf from his presence. If you're even a penny short, I'll put you out on the barren roads where you and your kind belong. Bill Doody proudly poured his satchel of gold onto the landlord's desk. Be sure to count it all. I've no doubt that you will. And do me a favour there, and give me a receipt. The incredulous landlord counted each shekel, and when all was accounted for, he wrote and signed a receipt of payment. Bill Doody received the notice, and politely left Tim the driver's home, with his hat still proudly on his head. The landlord watched Bill go, unsure really what had just happened. When he turned back to his desk to look at his gold, horror smacked his face, and his stomach shriveled as he saw that every coin of gold had turned to gingerbread. It cannot be, said the landlord. I counted these myself. They were unmistakably the weight and feel of guineas. But now all that remained were biscuits with icy designs of gold upon them. And worst of all for Tim the driver, he had given Bill Doody a receipt. There was nothing more that he could do. Even though he had given away all of his gold, Bill Doody became a very rich man from that day on. His crop never failed again. He was savvy to con men, and his children grew to inherit the land, the farm, and remain in their beloved Kerry. And not a day went by where Bill Doody did not give thanks to the blessing he received from O'Donoghue, the eternal great king of Killarney Lake. The end.
Come on, Sissy That Pod, let's get sickening!
Are you a fan of the Emmy award-winning show RuPaul's Drag Race?
Do you think about Roxy Andrews at the bus stop?
And do you belong in Party City?
Well, Sissy That Pod is the podcast for you. Join me, James, and my co-host, Keen.
Is there something on my face?
As we chat weekly about the runway realness, sickening shade, and backstage buffoonery.
That's right, whether it's new episodes of Drag Race US, UK, or All Stars. Sissy That Pod will spill the tea with a new episode for you within 24 hours.
So make good choices and subscribe to Sissy That Pod from the Headstuff Podcast Network, and we'll leave you gagging on our eleganza.
Now, let the music play!
And that is the tale of Rent Day on Fireside, and I hope you all enjoyed it. This was a lot of fun for a couple of reasons. So this is actually, as you might have been able to tell, it's almost like there's two... So the mic fell off the table there. As you remember, there's two kind of different stories at play here. There is the legend of O'Donoghue and then the story of Bill Doody. And these were actually two separate tales, as it were, in the book, in Fairy and Folk Tales of Ireland, that I adapted from. The first is the legend of O'Donoghue itself. And so I read the legend of O'Donoghue and really liked it, but there wasn't really a story there because it ends with him going into the lake and the rumours that he has seen. So it was only like two pages of just kind of backstory of O'Donoghue, and there wasn't really a tale there, so to speak. And so then I kept reading a couple more tales, and the next tale was this tale called Rent Day, and was seemed totally unrelated until, of course, this stranger on a white horse reveals himself, or doesn't reveal himself, or the character Bill Duty, after he's gone, realizes who it must have been. And it was only then that I realized that the two stories were connected, that the Legend of Donoghue set up Rent Day, and so they could only exist together. And luckily, they were both quite short. Even with the two of them together, this episode or this story was a bit shorter, certainly shorter than The Giant Stairs last week, for example. But so that was a really exciting way to come about it and to get to set up with this mythic legend at the beginning, and then to go to a very traditional folk tale. It kind of felt like the best of both worlds. You had like the mythology and the folklore in one story, and how the mythology informs the folklore. So I loved setting up O'Donoghue and then getting to meet this Bill Duty sat by the lake in Killarney, who's just having trouble with his rent. And I'm sure you can see the couple of times. And to be fair, I tend to do this a bit with particularly T. Croft and Croker adaptations, where sometimes there's just, because I write these from scratch, you know, I read this story a couple of times, depending on how much detail there is in the story or the type of story it is, sometimes I'll have to have the book beside me. My ideal is that I read a story twice and then write my own version. I love when a story makes that much of an impression and the blocks are there, the bones are there, and then I can just have fun, and then I can really be creative with it. And if I have something I want to put in or take out, that just comes kind of naturally. If I have to be looking back and forth between the book as I'm adapting, it feels less like an adaptation and feels a bit slower, or it's a bit more laborious. The only cases are if there's a spelling of something or a particular detail, you know, that I do want to get right. But I tend not to lift phrases entirely, because I like forming my own sentences and telling this is my own story. That's one of the things I'm interested in most in, is the writing of it. And that's, I think, the reason I've still done so many episodes of Fireside, is that the quantity has always been a thing I've really liked. Just the more of these stories to be able to say that I'd written, and just to be constantly writing every week. There's no doubt that if I hadn't gotten into this habit of writing a script for this every week, I wouldn't have been able to write a book and now be writing another one. So when writing this story of O'Donoghue, it was a case where I read it a couple of times and read Rent Day a couple of times and was able to just go off. But particularly because it was about rent, I was able to channel some of these things. But some of these lines were actually essentially direct lifts from, or slightly edited for my purposes, lifts from T. Croft and Croker. So I do want to pay homage or pay a credit where credit was due. It was this one sentence in particular, I guess, that I edited slightly. It's like, "And the eye that sees all knows that there's no way to love or respect a landlord." I've kind of made that a bit more specific to landlords at the beginning, but the eye that sees all knows, I really liked that as a phrase. And thought ultimately, like, because I would always like to do my own versions entirely of these stories, and don't like when I lift directly, because I just don't really do that, and that's not as much fun. But then if there's no better way of me saying it, and particularly if it's a really unusual phrase like that, I don't see the shame, or I think it would be worse to not homage it and not throw in the couple of lines from it. But yeah, wanted to give a note on that line particularly. So we have this Tim the driver, this landlord, and we get what's cathartic about this tale, especially for anyone who's ever had a bad landlord, is that Bill gets to say all the things that no one ever gets to say to their landlord, because he has this gold with him and he's able to pay it off. And he's able to tell this man that this man's greed has destroyed his country. And I did mean those things when I was saying that that Ireland's whole thing is its welcome. It's Cade Mila Fáilte, it's 100,000 welcomes. Sorry, that's, I don't know what I'm there. It's 100,000 welcomes, and the idea of greed and the idea of a place being inhospitable to other people or to the people living there kind of does take the heart out of the 100,000 welcomes a bit, and it really highlighted what was already a really fairly dire situation in the country. And I don't like making the podcast like political or anything. You know, this is this is very much, this is storytelling, you know, and that's, I never have an agenda or anything. That's not how I, certainly not how I work as a creative yet. But this very naturally formed this way of thinking, and it made it very personal, and it made it really enjoyable and fun as well to write and to get to do this imagining of all the things you would love to say to your landlord if you had a bad one. And Bill Duty gets to do this, and he gets to give him all his gold. And then when he leaves, the gold becomes gingerbread, which is wonderful. It usually, like fairy gold, usually becomes like dead leaves or twigs or something, you know, but it's something about it being gingerbread. And gingerbread, that detail was in the story as well, in the adaptation, was that the gingerbread was like, had the icing to look like gold guineas, so it still looked like coins, as if he had been tricked the whole time, but he knew that he had felt the weight of it. And I love as well, as often happens with these tales as well, that the blessing of O'Donoghue continued. And there's a fierce sense of place and pride, and having the lake makes it very focused as well, because like Irish folk tales are certainly, I found, more unique than, I guess, when I'd be reading, or even the odd time I've adapted folklore from other cultures, you're nearly often always getting a translation, or, you know, several translations. But there's, take the Grimms, like take Germanic folklore, as they are the kind of godfathers of it all, with the Brothers Grimm, Kinder und Hausmachen tales. They are very Germanic and set in Germany, very much so, but there is such a universality to them. That is the reason why everyone in the Western world knows Little Red Riding Hood and Cinderella and Snow White and Sleeping Beauty and all of these European folk tales. And so Irish folk tales tend to not be that. They tend to be a lot more specifically rooted in a very specific place and very specific village and road, and there's a really colloquial nature to them, and I like that. But where I can, I do like to almost take one step back from it. I did that good bit with the Giant Stairs. The Giant Stairs was much more rooted in a specific place, but it felt like it had such that universality that I felt I can just give the details of this and then it can be anywhere. And that's the idea, like, you want to find that balance, like James Joyce said, in the particular is found the universal. So you want a place to be rooted, and in your mind, when you're listening to it, or me as I'm writing it, I want to create that sense that this is a real place, because these are about non-real things or otherworldly things. I want whatever there is. That's why you can accept a story about a legendary king who essentially drowned himself and then came and gave gold to a man to pay his rent. You can accept all that because he's paying his rent, and that's something that nearly all of us have done. And that's where the balance is. You like to feel like this is, you can touch this. You want to feel like you can smell that gingerbread, that you could feel the weight of that gold. Oh God, that's just obviously I'm holding the mic. Sorry about those pops. And yeah, that just, that the rent aspect gave this story that potency. That made it fun and made it really engaging, at least for me, and I hope you all felt that as well. And yes, hopefully we have not seen the last of O'Donoghue. I will wrap things up now. It is time for my bed. That's two I've recorded just there. The next week we will have another tale from the same book. As I said, I'm trying to incorporate stories that we may not have done types of in a while or before, and I found a great one for next week as well. That was originally in the book. It's called Flory Cantillon's Funeral, but my nickname, or my name for it, is The Grave Beneath the Wave, which I quite like the name of, which is a Merrow tale. We haven't had a tale about the mermaids of Ireland in a long, long time, not since the first couple of months of the podcast, so it's overdue to go back to Merrowville. So that'll be next week. So follow me over on Instagram at FiresideBard, email me at thefiresidebard@gmail.com, buy my book, my poetry book, Garden Sea, at headstuff.org, or in Kindle version on Amazon. Support the podcast at Headstuff Plus on headstuffpodcast.com. All of the links are in the description below. I will see you all. You'll hear me all next time. Remember, wherever you are and wherever you go, you can always join me by the fireside.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.